Welcome to Robbinsdale Revisited. Today we'll talk about the 1960s with Pete Ritchie, president of the Robbinsdale Historical Society. The 1960s were a time of sweeping change, both nationally and here in Robbinsdale. The baby boomers were rebelling, growing their hair long, and living their best teenage years. They enjoyed music at a local teen venue called Someplace Else, and they cheered on local bands like the Trashmen, the Castaways, and Still Rovin'. School District 281 continued to expand, and the city of Robbinsdale reached its peak population of 16,381 people.
Well, as sort of a lead-up, let's go back to the 1950s, which I just think of this huge housing boom where they were filling in all the spaces that weren't filled in the 1920s, all the things that had been platted so many years ago, and the streets had been laid, but the houses had never been built. All that gets filled in the 1950s. And actually, between 1950 and 1960, we get a 45% population increase. And so now we're up to 16,381, which is more people than live here now. I guess you can think of these houses were newer, but they weren't on the scale of the houses we build now. And kids shared bedrooms. So, you know, families were bigger. You might have 3, 4 kids, maybe more. I just remember people who would tell me that they grew up and the upstairs bedroom would have 4 boys in it. You know, it would just be a great big open spot, like in a Cape Cod, or even in some of these Ramblers. You would just pile as many kids as you needed to into those rooms, and not everybody got their own room. But you just had tons and tons of kids, and the school district is just growing and growing. And District 281 at the time has an enrollment of 14,700. So that's not just Robbinsdale, of course, but you got Robbinsdale, Crystal, New Hope, parts of Golden Valley. As sort of a list, I'm thinking of all these elementary schools. So when the decades open in 1960, you've got Adair Elementary, just across the street from Robbinsdale. It later becomes Bear Elementary. And then you got Kavanaugh Elementary. And it's funny to think of the names of these things because Kavanaugh was named after a builder who had made a little section of town over there called Kavanaugh Oaks. These names just keep appearing and reappearing. The Kavanaugh business started in the 1920s with home building, and they built quite a few places over in Golden Valley too. Forest Elementary over there in Crystal. Lee Elementary, which was the biggest elementary school in the state for a little while. Lincoln Elementary down there in Golden Valley. Neal Elementary. And then you have New Hope Elementary, which was this cute, almost, you know, tiny schoolhouse-looking building. And that was where the District 281 headquarters is now. And then Noble Elementary, where I went to school. And it was just down there on Noble Avenue. And, of course, Noble comes up through Robbinsdale, too. And a lot of Robbinsdale kids went to Noble, the ones that weren't going to Lee. The kids from prestigious South Robbinsdale all went to Noble. And Northport Elementary, Oak Grove Elementary, the old Robbinsdale High School becomes the Regent Junior High, which nobody ever called it that. And I'm sure that they must have officially changed it to Robbinsdale Junior High. They seem to have this tradition of either naming things after the neighborhood or after the street that they're on. And Sandburg Junior High. And that was a big deal when it opened because Carl Sandburg himself came and addressed the student body and read them a poem. There's lots of pictures of that. And it was a big deal in the newspaper. And when I went to Sandburg Junior High, they were still talking about that. And his picture was in various places. In an English class, we, you know, studied Carl Sandburg and read a few of his poems. I just love the idea of a school being named after a poet. Maybe all of our schools should be named after poets, you know, Robert Frost High School. But we had Sandburg Junior High and Thorson Elementary, and Twin Lake Elementary was actually in our school district. At some point, I've always thought that was over in the Brooklyn Center, the tiny school district over there, but it was Robbinsdale. Jeanette Fair, who Fair Elementary is named after, was a teacher and a principal over at the little Twin Lake Elementary. When it closed, and I'm not sure what year that is, she moved over to Fair. She became the principal there. When she retired, they changed the name of the school for her, which it's interesting talking to students many years later. She wasn't remembered all that fondly because she was kind of severe as a disciplinarian, maybe paddled a kid or two. They renamed the school for Jeanette Fair. She was still alive when they decided to close the school as the schools all started closing. And of course, was saddened by that. The newspaper came and talked to her and asked her how she felt about her school being closed. Many years later, the same building is reused as this fair community school or art school. And but they, rather than naming it after her, they continued with the name FAIR, but just the FAIR stood for something. It was an acronym. So in 1960, the Little Robbinsdale Library, they've just decided it's too small. And the library club, still not the Hennepin County Library System, but the library club says, we really need to raise some money and build a little expansion. And of course, Crystal and I are sitting in that expansion right now. It was built in 1960. Again, they went to the local businesses. It's still 1960, so they're still asking their husbands, you know, can we have some money for the library? And lots of people pitch in. The Howard Lumber Company pitches in, and they get an addition built onto this building. The library got $25,000 grant to do some more remodeling, and they expanded this place. They created a new circulation desk, which is now the storage area of the Robbinsdale Historical Society over in the art gallery. They dropped the ceiling, which was a little sad with those big windows. And of course, when they remodeled this building again in the 1990s for the art gallery, they took out that drop ceiling so you could see those big windows again. There were 50 new cards issued the week of the expansion when they opened up the remodeled section, and the remodeled section, a lot of it was used for the children's area. Circulation every week was approaching 100,000, which seems astounding to me. So they had just a thriving little library here, and that lasted, you know, about another 16 years until 1976, when this building closes and the library moves down Rockford Road. The oldest church in town, which was the First Congregational Church, they decide they're going to rebuild and back behind Robbins Center. So their old church, which was where Pilgrim Cleaners is now, that had been built in the 1880s, was still standing, and they rented it out to a Baptist congregation for a while. When their new building was completed in 1961, the congregation had a ceremonial march from one church to the next, and there's lots of pictures of all these folks out in their Sunday best, braving icy sidewalks as they go down the road to their brand new church, which is not a bad piece of mid-century modern architecture. Great big swooping steeple, and they had a lot more room. It was just a much better place. Unfortunately, the old church, the Baptist church, they rented out for it, didn't last, and the building was torn down, which was the oldest, largest building in the town, I guess. The Robbinsdale City Band continues to thrive and get all sorts of accolades, and they're marching in every Aquatennial festival that's coming along. They are considered the champion band and the governor's favorite band. About this time, we start looking at Robbinsdale isn't the only commercial area anymore. You've got shopping malls, strip malls like Robbins Center. Robbins Center predated a lot of things because it was built in the 1950s, but in the early 1960s, you have various shopping malls in Golden Valley, shopping malls in New Hope. Crystal Shopping Mall is getting built, and a lot of people remember the great big crystal ball, which was this tower that had this mirrored ball on the top of it that spun around. And West Broadway, our little commercial strip, is starting to suffer from all the competition. There's still a lot of things on West Broadway. There's still a couple 3-2 bars, some restaurants. The old pharmacies are starting to fold. There's a great big Red Owl store that keeps expanding. You know, they knocked down our Village Hall for more room to expand, and then more room after that. We have a Dairy Way. The Chase restaurant has closed and become but it's still a malt shop of some sort. The Fawcett building is no longer being used for a bank, because the bank has moved down to the end of the block. But the clincher, where the city starts thinking, we really need to do something, can we revive our downtown? The Robbinsdale Post is running these articles about urban renewal and urban blight and all these old buildings. And what you really need to do is tear them all down and put up parking lots so that people will be able to park like they can at a strip mall. The idea of a little downtown strip has just become less appealing, although it's still iconic of Robbinsdale. The yearbooks at the time show the downtown strip in Robbinsdale. The businesses are still celebrating the sports teams at the high school having a victory. The businesses will close and all the high school kids will come over and maybe get a free meal or a free soda. But those things are all starting to pass away. because the great big indoor shopping malls are opening now. So, you know, in 1962, 63, you've got Brookdale opening. At first, it's just a big Sears store, but then you get a giant indoor mall with a JCPenney's, and Dayton's are there, and hundreds of other stores. The Woolworths moves out of Robins Center, and they go over there to Brookdale. And Robbinsdale's getting more and more worried about its retail base. Robins Center is still thriving, but the downtown area, you've got some vacant shops, old men sitting in the bars, the two or three bars. The Muni is still doing okay, which was our municipal bar. And of course, we still have municipal liquor stores. Later in the decade, though, things sort of start looking up because in 1967, they open up Montgomery Wards, which we all called Monkey Wards, and they paved over this giant swamp that was, you know, Crystal Lake, its wetland area, which was just to the west. But the Montgomery Wards was huge. In order to build it, just like with Robins Center, they had to take great big, basically telephone poles and lay them into the swamp and give the building something to rest on. But Montgomery Wards opens up to all sorts of fanfare. Santa Claus arrives in a helicopter. It's just it's a huge deal. And of course, it's right there next to the Terrace Theater. It's sort of like the Volk Brothers' idea that someday this would all be a shopping area. But they ran into the same thing that when they were building the Hy-Vee, they ran into. The swamp is a mess underneath it. It's not the easiest place to build. So most of that area that had been wetland becomes a blacktop. On the upside, it was a great place for all the neighborhood kids to come and ride their bikes around and around in circles. This was a parking lot that was never full. It was so vast. It stretched from the hill where France Avenue is. And then you had a couple places where there were dry land and they built the buildings like Montgomery Ward and the Terrace Theater. But those are just kind of at the higher point of the land. The rest of it is all becomes blacktop and a great place to go ride your bike. Highway 81, which at that time was called Highway 52, was a little slower. There was less traffic and it was tree lined. And if you look at old pictures, aerial photos, you'll see that the trees were actually pretty good sized and it was sort of a pretty little stretch. As you go north from there, where North Memorial Hospital is, North Memorial Hospital is just expanding and expanding in the 1960s. So you start out with that little building in the 1940s. At some point, Dr. Samuelson sells his interest. It becomes North Memorial Hospital. A guy named DeMung is the commissioner. The mayor, who was Sahaki at the time, and DeMung are not getting along because the hospital wants to build parking ramps. They want to build, you know, 6- and 7-story buildings. They are swallowing up the neighborhood. They're buying up houses so that they can have more land. Of course, eventually we know they march all the way across the street and swallow up a church. And pretty soon, somehow, they get that street from the city too. At this time, the mayor is saying, you know, this is a residential community. This is a bedroom community. We don't want a giant hospital that's got ambulances coming and going in all hours of the night. And it's so noisy. And now you're bringing in a helicopter and you're going to land a helicopter right next to the street. And is this a great idea? And it's just going to be so much noise and hustle and bustle. And that's not the kind of community that we want. And at one point he says, North Memorial owns all this land out in Maple Grove. Why don't they go build their hospital out there? Of course, many years later, that's exactly what they did. We still have our giant hospital here. I can't imagine why Sahaki wanted the hospital out of here. When you think of the amount of tax revenue that the hospital has to generate for the city, we don't have other large businesses like that. You know, the District 281 got to rely on things like Brookdale and Honeywell and some of these things for its property tax base. The city of Robbinsdale had very little. I mean, there's only so much you can get out of all the residences in the city, and having that hospital here has to contribute to the tax base. Not all the neighbors loved it, and it just kept building and expanding and became the giant thing that it is these days. Another little institution that's still standing that opened up in 1964 was the Guaranty State Bank. Of course, they had all sorts of festivities and all sorts of things going on in the parking lot, musical events. And I know they had Rudy Valley at one point. They had this organist named Don Lee. The building is still there. And I actually think it's kind of a decent looking little mid-century piece of architecture. And what I always remember is they had this giant steel tower out in front of it, and I'm afraid it's long gone. And at the top of the tower was this little spinning sign that had a cute little robin on it, and it would say, "Welcome to Robbinsdale," and it was Guaranty State Bank. And when I was a kid, there was this song by the Silver Connection, a disco number, and it was called "Fly Robin Fly." And whenever I hear that song, I see this steel tower with this little robin sign spinning around at the top. I just get chills thinking about it. You know, it seemed like this great tower, and maybe that should be our anthem here in Robbinsdale, the "Fly Robin Fly" by the Silver Connection. You know, the cultural waves of the 1960s certainly don't skip over Robbinsdale. One of the best examples, and one that everybody who was high school age in this town remembers, was a nightclub called Someplace Else. It had a fantastic marquee of cursive lettering, and this was where Lion's Gym is now. It was the bowling alley before that. But in the early 1960s, this place was a Chinese restaurant. Now, I don't know what they did with the back of the building because it was a huge building. I mean, the bowling lanes were long, and it's hard to imagine that the Chinese restaurant used anything other than the very front of the building. In fact, I know they didn't. But they had a typical decor for the day. They tried to make it look like a little village somewhere in China, and the menus were all red, and there were fortune cookies and everything else that you'd imagine. And this lasted for a couple years, but they didn't make it. They went out of business. And so then a couple comes along and they've got an idea for a nightclub. Their first idea was you had all these big bands, people like Count Basie, all sorts of people were touring the country. And at one time they were big names in the 40s, but now it's the 1960s. And if you want to make money in the nightclub, though, you're not going after the rock and roll crowd. You're going to go after the jazz people, the big band people, and you're going to bring them in. You're going to bring in your class acts because you want adults that buy liquor. Problem was, Robbinsdale was still only municipal liquor. So they appealed to the city council and they said, you know, we want to do setups in this bar. So people can bring in a bottle and you can have your Coke sitting on the table. And if you keep your whiskey underneath the table, you can have a whiskey and Coke. So we'll just do setups. Would that be okay? And the city council's saying no. And they're saying, look, we're bringing in these class acts like Count Basie. People want to have a drink to enjoy this stuff. They brought in the Everly Brothers, which was, you know, a little more toward the pop and the rock. But they were bringing in big names, and the city council was just, no, this isn't the sort of thing we want going on. Besides, we have this municipal liquor law. The only people that can serve liquor that aren't grandfathered in, like the 3-2 bars, are the Muni, which was across the street. So they say, okay, we wanted to have a class nightclub where we were bringing in great jazz acts, and, you know, mom and dad could come in and dress up for the night and go down and dance and see the nightclub, but we'll just we'll switch things up and we'll become a teen nightclub. Then we don't have to worry about liquor. And this was a trend all over the cities at that time. There were lots of teen clubs, and that's where you went to see your rock and roll bands because they knew the kids didn't have that much money. They would come and maybe pay a door fee, but they couldn't make money selling them drinks. But there was still money in rock and roll, and so rock and roll wasn't showing up in bars. It was kiddie music. They open up Someplace Else, reopen it again. They take a look at the front where all the Chinese restaurant was. And they, rather than using the entrance they were using before, they have people go through what used to be the restaurant. And there was a sliding bookcase so you'd walk in and it looked like a little Chinese restaurant. And then you would, you know, go over to the little desk and tell them that you were here to see such and such a band. And they would swing open this bookcase and then you would go back into this nightclub setting. And that's where all the rock and roll was. And that's where the kids were dancing. It was just a great scene. And at that time, rock and roll was a big deal. We had just kind of come out of the Beatles. So we're here in the later 60s and it's crazy time back there. They're not playing silly little Beatles songs anymore. They're playing raunchy blues numbers, and the hair is long, and the guitars are loud, and they're leaping about. One of the biggest pieces of notoriety for this little club called the Someplace Else was a band called South 40, and they put out this album, and on the front cover of the album, it's South 40 live at Someplace Else. You've got these kids screaming into microphones, and a lot of times they were just doing covers, but this band was doing originals, and they later the members reformed into something called Crow. They had a big hit called Evil Woman. They reformed again. They became something called Gypsy, and they had another big hit. At that time, too, people like the Trashmen, the Castaways, Underbeats, there were a few local bands. They were all playing there, and it became quite a scene. Joker's Wild was another one. Unfortunately, these kids got really rowdy. Fights broke out. The band Joker's Wild, which was sort of heading to something a little bit bigger, maybe getting a record contract. They had stored their equipment in the club, and there was a fire, and their equipment all burned. It just seemed to be mayhem, and the city council started having meetings, and they said, we just don't want this going on. And then another fight broke out, and then somebody had a gun, and that was the end of Someplace Else. But it was someplace that everybody's still telling stories about to this day. There's a YouTube video just about the history of Someplace Else. It's kind of fun to watch. Everybody's got a memory of it. It was our rock and roll club. And I also know that for years, the cursive sign and the lettering had these blue light bulbs that would light up and say Someplace Else. They just lifted it up and put it on the roof. And it sat there for 20 some years. Eventually, they threw it off and took care of it. And it also became, right after it closed, they were saying, what are we going to do with this space now? Who are we going to rent it out to? And a guy named Bobby Fern comes along, and it becomes a beauty school after that. So it was Bobby Fern's Beauty School, which a lot of people still remember. That wasn't the only rowdy thing that the hippie kids were doing. Step back just for a minute before that to talk about Robbinsdale's greatest rock and roll band, which, of course, was the Trashmen. Just a couple weeks after John Kennedy was shot, the Trashmen come out with their huge hit, Surfing Bird. Two of them had gone to Robbinsdale High School. Two of them had gone to Henry, but they all knew each other, and they would meet here in Robbinsdale and do their practicing. That thing went to number one, and it's still the strangest thing. And you could make the connection to the nickname of Birdtown with Surfing Bird. It's as good a connection as any. I don't think it really came from there, but it's the only band in Robbinsdale that had a big number one hit. As I mentioned before, we had bands like the Castaways, where we had a couple members that went to Robbinsdale High School, and guys that grew up in this area. The Castaways might be best remembered for, well, Liar Liar was their big hit. But the reason I know about the Castaways and the reason they entered my consciousness is because they appeared on an episode of Gilligan's Island. They were the Castaways. How could they not show up on Gilligan's Island? They also appeared in a couple movies just doing this song. And all the time when I was growing up, you know, there was a little chant. And it was, you know, liar, liar, pants on fire, nose as long as a telephone wire. You know, I'm sure that was everywhere. I've wondered if it was specific to Robbinsdale because we knew the Castaways had people from this area and people that went to Robbinsdale High School. And so we just figured that the chant came from the song, which is this man, and I thought it was a woman singing for ages. I think everybody did, I'm going to try and imitate it. Let's see.
La la, pants on fire, knows a song as a telephone wire.
And he sounded about like that, but he put, you know, have enough reverb on the voice that it sounds pretty good. And it was a huge hit. The other big band was called the Still Rovin, and they had done a cover of Hey Joe, which everybody did. Jimi Hendrix did a cover of it. It was just out there in the ether. And sure enough, when I was a kid playing in a garage band and all the other garage bands, we all did Hey Joe, but they actually made a hit of it. And they had a couple other neat little 60s ditties. Over at the high school, rebellion continued because they decided they wanted to wear jeans to school. Why can't we wear jeans to school? The administration said, no, it's not proper. We don't want you wearing jeans to school. We especially don't want girls wearing jeans to school. That's not what we're wearing to school. And so 300 or 400 kids walked out of the school, and they had great big signs, and they marched around the school saying, we're not going to take it anymore. We're going to wear our jeans, and you can't stop us. And they all got suspended. And there were articles in the Minneapolis Tribune and the Robbinsdale Post about these rebellious kids and them wanting to wear jeans. And they really were kind of rebellious kids. And they also weren't afraid to speak their mind and take some chances, especially with the student newspaper. When I look at the student newspapers from about 1967 to about 1970, the subjects they were willing to take on amaze me. They were willing to take on Vietnam. They were going to give you the pros and the cons and have little letters from the editor and ask other kids walking down the hall, what do you think of this issue or what do you think of that issue? But they generally took a really left-leaning editorial, and they were willing to take on abortion. And they came out sort of as an editorial board and said that, you know, abortion wasn't going to be legal. And the rumor is that the principal got heard about this and was doing everything he could to make sure that that newspaper didn't get out. And he impounded and destroyed a whole bunch of copies of it, but 300 or 400 copies of it made it out. The other thing they would take on, other than just the blue jean issues and the political issues, is they would endorse various political candidates. There was a summer of rioting down on West Broadway and over on the north side, Plymouth Avenue. All sorts of retail businesses burned. There was an organization called The Way that was working on social justice and racial issues at the time. And the Robin, our local high school newspaper, sent their reporters down there to do an article on that. So they would take on that issue. They took on the issue of what it's like to be a Native American in the 1960s. Some of these things they handled well, some of them maybe not so much, but they weren't afraid to take on anything. And it always just surprises me, because I don't think a student newspaper, at least the one when I was growing up, you know, the student newspaper took on nothing. They would tell you about the pep rallies and the homecoming, but they never took on a political issue. And the Robin kind of not only did it in the 60s, although certainly a lot more in the 60s, but even earlier issues, and maybe that was just part of being a student newspaper back then. The kids were rowdy in Robbinsdale, though, and I think there's a lot of people who would have been surprised that there was anything going on in Robbinsdale at all. But we had our own version of 60s rebellion right here.
Thanks for listening. I'm Crystal Boyd. Robbinsdale Revisited is brought to you by the Robbinsdale Historical Society. Our little history museum is located at 4915 42nd Avenue North in the heart of Robbinsdale. We're open Fridays and Saturdays from 10 to 3. You can also visit us online at robbinsdale.org. You found this episode, so you know where to find the next one. Back home, sitting hand in hand, when the evening ends, when the evening ends, when the evening ends, in Robbinsdale, in Robbinsdale.
Our theme music is provided by Gabe Barnett and The Rounders.